C1SP. Number 15A.
Well, I tried just at the end of the last hour to ask the question, well, what does this first part mean to us practically in our work? Well, it means a very big thing, namely that it first gives us a pure starting basis from which to work. That's all what it gives at first, a pure starting basis, which says, if spirit is all, then take only one starting basis, one standpoint, and discard in our thinking the belief in two powers, in two bases. It just makes clear to one's consciousness that it says, because mind is infinite, therefore, it can never create something which is finite. It has never created a finite proposition or a finite creation. It says, and because God is spirit, and spirit is the only, therefore, the real nature of this creation is always spiritual, and never a mingling of spirit and matter. And it says, because God is soul, and because God is soul which has identity, we can rely on this one basis from which we have gone out, which is infinite and only spiritual in its nature. We can rely on this nature as the only immutable and real nature, that it doesn't change, that the harmony of being has never changed, that we have never to do with fallen condition. And it shows that because life is deathless, it can never be its opposite, it can never die, and that we have never to go out from a death situation or from a fear of death or a fear of destruction. The moment I drop to that plane, I leave the pure standpoint of life. And then it's in the sixth subject shows that if truth, which is a scientific fact, would not stamp evil as evil, would not show that truth is factual, then truth could be dual. Then error and truth could go on side by side. But because truth is factual and stamps error as not factual, then in that consciousness I have a basis in which error does yield to truth. And so lastly, I always see that because love is universal in its blessedness and in its inclusiveness, therefore it will never sanction that anything which is not good can develop, can have a fulfillment. That therefore, from the basis which I take in any situation is that I claim the fact that God is love and all-inclusive and therefore has a solution for everything. And that therefore I don't need to resort to anything outside God for a solution, or that I would have to fear that the solution would not be brought about. Love has identity, and if I stay with that on that basis and don't deviate from that basis, I always can see that there is a plan working which leads to fruition. So that's my starting basis. See, it's a very practical starting base in any situation where I say right from the beginning, mortal existence is an enigma. The physical senses cannot testify to what is real and what is delusive. Therefore, I resort to God I resort to the principle of being, and I make myself clear how does the universe of this divine mind look like. What is the nature and the essence and the form and the eternality of this creation of divine mind? And so I establish in the first part a true basis from which to go out. And then we come to the second part. And then the snake creeps in. Then spiritualism comes and says, I deny your statement. I deny your analysis of the first part, because I can give you sensible evidence to the contrary. I can give you a very sensible evidence to the contrary, and gives to the senses those so-called counterproofs which spiritualism, which any belief, any human belief can give. And so we will see in this second part how we deal with this argument of spiritualism against the statement of the first part. In other words, we will have to see that we will have to see what lies behind the claims of spiritualism. And seeing what lies behind the claim of spiritualism, we will see that behind it lies human thought. That everything which spiritualism shows as claims, that everything which extraordinary phenomena, be it the phenomena of clairvoyance, or of mesmerism, or of hypnotism, or of anything like that, that behind it we can always trace it back to its origin as mortal mind. And having it reduced to mortal mind, then we can see and we can ask ourselves, all right, then if the basis is mortal mind, then whatever the phenomena are, if they seem to be good or evil, they must always be a lie. They must always be untrue. So we get that second part which we have as an overall tone of mind and truth in the positive and in the negative. We'll see that the second part always will be uncovering to our consciousness what is finally irreducible to mortal mind. If it is reducible to mortal mind, we can say to its phenomena, whatever the phenomena look like, if they are vested in angelic garments or not, they are a lie, they are not true. They can't be true. Whatever comes from mortal mind, from the origin of mortal mind, must always be false. Or in the positive, we'll see that all that goes back to the first part, that all that goes back to the creation of the divine mind, whatever starts with our realization of the divine mind, that the outcome of it must always be true. That it always must be true, no matter if we like it or don't like it. No matter if it will be persecuted or not persecuted by mortal mind. It's true. That's the second part which we will see here. We had a few references from Prose work which I feel are so clear, where she says, all that are called communications from spirit lies within the realm of mortal thought. See, that all these phenomena of spiritualism, all the phenomena of material existence, of mortal material existence, lie within the range and the plane of mortal thought. We can't give to them a divine origin. She says that the divine mind reveals itself to humanity through spiritual law. On the other side, we always can see that if we resort to the divine mind, that that divine mind also communicates itself. That the divine mind is not something which is static, something which is hidden, which is unknown, but that it has it in its nature as the power of manifestation. It's the mind of Christ that always manifests itself, and what it does manifest is always true. So, here we are. We will be facing here the claims of human belief, which on its surface seem to disprove the statements of the first part, the statements of Christian Science. And they seem to disprove them either on the basis of the testimony of the physical senses, and in that case we have to reduce them, to reduce this testimony and ask them, where does that testimony come from? We always arrive at mortal mind, and so we solve that problem. Or that this so-called disproof against the statement of Christian Science will come from mystery, that there are some mysterious phenomena which nobody seems to be able to explain, that there are so-called supernatural phenomena, haunted houses, ghostly voices and so on, which again we have to ask, where do they come from? Are they coming from spirits? Are they coming from God, spirit? Are they coming from the divine mind? Or if we dig down and down and down, do we find mortal mind? So it's always here the uncovering that is going on. You know, that whole second part has a lot to do with the uncovering. The first part had to do with the analysis. Now the uncovering, where she says right at the beginning that every seed of error sowing has to be digged up, that we must that science must come in and dispel mystery, that which can solve the mystery and give a reason and explanation for extraordinary phenomena and for mysterious phenomena and for the assertions of spiritualism must be science. That we must, through the means of science, come to an explication which is always an explication about the cause of the phenomena, never about the effect. We will see how the effect can fool us right through, but that if we trace any happening, any phenomena back to its origin, that we can no more be fooled, because then we always arrive either at mortal mind or at divine mind. Arriving at mortal mind, we know it's fooling us, it's untrue. Arriving at divine mind, we know the manifestations must be right, must be true. So let's go through this second part. The second part was the subject of the last weekend we had together. The first subject showed us that spiritualism bases itself on human beliefs and hypotheses. Or we can turn it the other way around and can say, whenever we base ourselves on human beliefs, whenever we base ourselves on human hypotheses, that we can call the system of spiritualism. Whereas Christian Science, on the other side, bases itself on the intelligence of the mind of Christ. See, because it is a question, what is the basis? Do we take as our basis the human mind, with all its forms, with its beliefs, hypotheses, mysteries, and so on? Do we take as the basis the human mind? Then we have a system of spiritualism. Do we take as our basis the divine mind? Then we have the system of Christian Science. Because Christian Science always goes back to God. Whatever does not go back as a basis to God, but goes back on anything else, will always be reducible to human thought and mortal mind. So, science comes in, must explain the mysteries of being, and says, yes, that which goes out from human thought and mortal thought is just always voicing human opinions. It's always voicing what it sees and what it believes. It is describing disease and fearing disease and fearing death. See, it's the if we fall back on the human mind, we have always the whole talking and influence and the whispering of the human mind. It's she shows there how this human mind in and the voicing of the human mind with all its fears and doubts and thoughts of disease have just one effect: to drive people into sickness and death. See, mind and truth. Says if I start with the voice and the sayings of the human mind, I always get as an effect something which is erroneous, a lie. Whereas the scientific mental method, which she shows here, says that rests on the mind of Christ. That Jesus used another voicing of the basis and says he voiced the basis of the divine mind, and that was always to heal and to save. And so what has to go on is really a change in the basis. It says, well, so much health has been restored by changing the patient's thoughts. That by changing the basis, we change the effect. Very logical. So, by changing the basis from beliefs to what she calls the right of intelligence, it's a nice combination of mind and truth, which says, after all, has man the right to go to the true source of existence, to the mind of God? Or do we have just to believe everything that the human mind voices to us? All the fears and doubts and misconceptions and warnings and so on, should we believe on that? It's a subject which is much bigger than it seems at first. Because if we look at our life, we'll see at once how much our harmony of being is disturbed, how much then afterwards our health is disturbed because of what others say or think or doubt or do, and we take that in. Spiritualists to the nth degree. As a Christian scientist, she says, you only listen to that what divine mind says. Think of the freedom that begins to set in here. That she says, we have the right to go back to intelligence, the right of intelligence. Start with mind. If in all the situations, in all the situation from morning to night, we would let the divine mind talk to us, what a freedom we would get. And in spite that we know that, we get influenced by the voice and the utterings and influencing of other people's human minds. Human mind. What other people think and say about the situation, what other people think and say about us, what other people's opinions of good and evil are, what other people's opinion are, what we should do and what we shouldn't do, and so on. It's spiritualism. And it's that which will always lead to death. Because it's not keeping the commandment. The commandment is here to keep to the utterings and the voicing of the divine mind. And let us be still in our mind and say, what does mind say about his own creation? And what mind says about his own creation, that is true. And all other people are liars. It is so. Somewhere, I think in Romans, Paul says, let God be true, but all mortal men are liars. That's a clear uncovering here of the first subject, which we should take at our heart and really take it in. Let that mind speak to us which is God from morning to night. And let not your heart be troubled by human voicings. That's science. That's the uncovering of science. Science says you have to stick to your principle, and your principle is mind. That's the basis from which you go out. Then you give the subject of spirit, the second subject. There, again, she shows the difference between spiritualism and Christian science. She says, what is the strength we have? What is that which vitalizes us? She says, well, the spiritualists say that it is mystery, and the belief in so-called spirits, which can give us strength. On the other side, we have Christian Science, which says, no, if we go back to that basis, which is mind, and cling to that which we know is the mind of Christ, and not the human mind, we'll get all the strength we need. And so we get a nice exposition first that, see, she ended the first subject and said, divine mind controls body and brain. And because mind controls body and brain, that mind will give all that the body needs to be strong and healthy and vital and fresh and so on. I always say, and so on, and I don't know anything more. It's a cheap trick. So, we have that sense, you see, that the more we rely on the first subject, positively on the mind of Christ, the more we apprehend the truth about being, that he says, that strengthens you. That gives you strength. That gives you fresh strength for your body and brain. That is that which enables you to do well without being weary. That gives the freshness of mind, the freshness of life. Whereas spiritualism comes and says, no, go to another source than God. Go to another basis than God. Go to a cup of tea or a cup of coffee. That also gives you strength and inspiration. If you have a good cup of tea or a good cup of coffee again, you can get on another hour. Or, they say, resort to spirits. Get in touch with spirits, because spirits also can make you strong. Because the belief is that spirits can also strengthen matter, that they can move matter, that they can exercise power over matter. And spiritualism shows that very clearly in this, all these phenomena of table tipping, tipping and table tapping and I don't know what, and the chair tapping and chair moving and so on. Well, it just shows how mortal mind can exercise strength over matter. I like the term she uses there. It convulses matter. Convulses matter. Well, do we need spiritualism to do that? You just look at any one of us, and just have somebody who tells something very nasty about us, and just tells us how nasty we are and how rotten we are, how we jump up. It convulses our whole body. It converts our whole body. See, it really does. But the point is that spiritualism thinks that that which convulses that body is something outside of our consciousness, whereas science comes and must solve that mystery and show, oh no, it's only our consciousness. Because if we rest in the divine mind, that body will not be convulsed if somebody says nasty things about us. Will not be convulsed. We'll just stay quiet and happy just the same, because we'll fall back on the first subject and say, now mind, divine mind, what do you say about your creation? And what you say about your creation, that's true. And I rely on that. And that's my substance. But the moment we leave that basis and go over to the other basis of human belief, then it's quite true that whatever that human belief is, if it is a belief in a departed spirit, or if it is the belief in a human person, the moment that person begins to move our mortal thought, it begins to convulse our whole body. I think if one looks at most cases of cancer or so, one begins to see that most cases come about like this, as she shows here. It's mortal thought first contemplating a cancer, the picture of a cancer, contemplating and taking in the fear of a cancer. Then that fear of a cancer begins to move and to move, and it begins to convulse the cells of our organism until it manifests itself materially. That we don't call spiritualism, though it is spiritualism, because it's in the belief that matter and that mortal mind and matter, that mind and matter cooperate. That mortal mind has power over matter. That's the belief. In spiritualism, in spiritualistic seance, it's the belief that the departed spirit has power over matter and therefore moves the chair or the table. In ordinary thought, it is the same, that the thought of mortal thinking begins to move until it convulses the whole body or an organ or some cells or any part of it, and shows material phenomena. But it's all happening within the range, what she says, within the range of mortal belief. Therefore, another one who may be around cancer case all his life never gets cancer because he never takes it in. And at the moment he doesn't take it in, it cannot convulse his body. And so it is with every sickness. So it is with every fear. So it is with every belief. That which strengthens us, that which is substance to us, is the divine mind. If we stay in that divine mind and see that only the creation of the divine mind is only our only mind, and therefore is the only thing which we contemplate and behold, then that contemplation of the divine mind will be our substance, will be our strength and our health and our vitality. There are no evil spirits. Those evil spirits are human beliefs. And it's up to us, through the first part, to analyze that these evil beliefs are not of God, and through the second part to see that we don't take them in. The moment we take them in, we take in mortal mind, and they always have an erroneous effect. It always has an erroneous effect. We really get the key to the kingdom here. We get the key to the kingdom, where we are no more just a ball which is thrown to and fro like a tennis ball, but where we have the safety and the kingdom of heaven in our hands. We have it. The question always is, are we consistent in it? If we are half-hearted, We are not consistent. If we are half-hearted, it's a bit here and a bit there. It's dualism, it's spiritualism. We take in both. We make a reality of both, and that's spiritualism. And then we don't need to be surprised that this spiritualism convulses our business, our mentality, our body, our home, our country, that it convulses anything.